Good evening and welcome to the inaugural show of Results Matter Radio. I am Erin Mazzaro's Chief Marketing Officer and Director of Client Service for the law firm of Burr & Foreman, and I will be your host for today's segment along with my co-host Lee Cantor, who is the CEO of Atlanta Business Radio X. If you are new to Results Matter Radio, welcome to our show. Our show was developed to bring you pertinent business information and other real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be. Before we jump into our show today, I want to welcome our guests and welcome my co-host, Lee. Hey, Lee.
Hey, how you doing, Erin?
I am
exciting.
Doing,
first
I know.
Show. A little nervous?
I am nervous, obviously, since I messed up my own firm name. You know, Burr.
At least you got your name right, though.
That's true. That's important. So, yeah, I'm very excited about our inaugural show. And I'm even more excited because of the guests we have on today. I tell you, these are two gentlemen in the business community who are very highly respected and well thought of. So I'm excited that we, Lee, you and I, have the opportunity to talk with them today.
Yep, smart people.
Excellent. We have, well, I'll just get right into it. We have John Cooper and Jack Stevenson with us today. But before we do that, I want to just talk a little bit about, you know, how we came upon this actual topic that we're going to discuss today. There are so many things in the business community right now. And when we talked about launching this show to be able to provide this information to our listeners, it was really difficult to determine where to focus on this initial launch. After a lot of deliberation, we decided to kick things off on Results Matter Radio with a four-part series around closely held businesses. Our four-part series will include holding on to your business and restructuring the same, what to do when your management team may be ready to retire or you decide you need to retire them, what to do if you are the family member who has been chosen to run the family business, and finally, what you should focus on when you're getting ready to sell your business and you want to do it successfully. So I have a little trivia here for you, Lee.
Yes, fire away.
Did you know that more than 90% of the companies in North America and a majority of businesses located around the world are family owned?
Well, now, see, if you would have asked me what percentage are family owned, then I would have not guessed that.
You would not have guessed that, yes. 90%. Some of the more recognizable businesses that are still managed by family members are, without looking at my cheat sheet.
I'll guess some of them. Ford.
Very good.
Walmart.
Very good.
Marriott.
No.
No?
No.
I think so.
Well, you know what? They're not on my list, but you actually being a family-owned business.
I might know that.
I think you would. Did you know Tootsie Roll?
Did not know that.
How about Harley Davidson?
Did not know that.
I didn't know that one either. Estee Lauder, I think we all know that. How about Playboy?
That makes sense. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not easy when you're transitioning a family business between generations, and that's a lot of what we're going to talk about over our four-part series. But, you know, it's interesting. One of the other statistics I found was 95% of closely held businesses don't even make it past the third generation.
Right, and that's really shocking.
Yeah, but, and you being a family-owned business of one.
Yes.
Yeah, are you going to make it?
I don't know. It's up to my kid, right? Or actually my kid's kid.
Well, you know, I think we've bantered long enough and people are probably ready to hear from our experts. Yes. So today's discussion, actually, as I mentioned, will be devoted to the restructuring of the business. And we're delighted, as I said, to have John Cooper and Jack Stevenson join us for this discussion. John Cooper has served as CEO and CFO of many public companies and as the managing partner of two offices of Coopers and Libren. Since retiring from his CEO position in 2008, John has spent a significant portion of his time assisting middle market businesses with strategy and working on corporate restructurings from both a financial and operational standpoint. John's experience covers a wide variety of industries, including manufacturing, technology, and financial. Jack Stevenson is a partner in our Birmingham office of Burr & Foreman and practices with the business section of our firm, focusing on tax planning for transactions involving business insurance, real estate, and healthcare entities, and the negotiation and implementation of such transactions. And Jack actually also holds the business section chair position, Lee, in our firm. So we're very delighted that both of these gentlemen could take time out of their busy schedules to join us today. So, gentlemen, thank you. Welcome to our show. I think we just jump right in. John, I have a question for you to start us off. You have had a lot of experience in dealing with closely held businesses. How do you know when it is time to restructure your business? What kind of signs are you looking for?
Well, Aaron, in today's world, the very first sign you look for, of course, is your cash flow. When cash flow starts to become too small, when it starts to get scarce, or when you start to have trouble complying with your bank loan agreements, maybe even when you start to hear from your suppliers that they don't feel as comfortable with you as a debtor as they once did, that all of those are indications that perhaps your business has drifted and perhaps you have lost some of the margin that you might have had in the past and that you may need to look at doing things differently.
And do you think that a lot of people, I think that should be pretty self-evident, but I think a lot of people tend to not view that in the right manner and kind of push that aside and say, well, cash flow seems fine.
Well, I think denial is part of our nature.
Yeah.
And certainly that is the prevalent tendency that you find among family-owned businesses is to deny the problem, to put the problem off. It's a painful problem. It's embarrassing. It's often very difficult to tell other members of the family that things have to change, to tell your wife, to tell your children, to tell your siblings, parents, whoever may be involved. And so I think given the natural human tendency to deny and rationalize, combined with the embarrassment that may flow within a family-owned business, it's a very difficult thing to face up to.
Yeah, and Jack, have you seen that? I mean, you deal with a lot of family-owned businesses and helping with the corporate side of...
Yes, we see it a good bit. It's very difficult for the lawyer to get too much involved. It helps to have a business consultant, and that was one of the reasons I thought John might be very good in this segment.
Okay, great. And John, what else are we looking for on restructuring?
Well, we're looking for, very simply, what do we owe? What are the things that we have to deal with? Certainly, in a restructuring situation, the things we have to deal with rank a great deal higher than the things we would prefer to deal with. Probably the first place we have to look, Aaron, would be to our bank. And what is our relationship there? What is the amount of runway we may have left on lending agreements? How close are we to the edge? What do we have to do to bring ourselves back into compliance with the covenants that the bank has set down in loan agreements? And what kind of relationship do we have with the individual banker that we deal with, and how aware is that person of where we stand?
Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, I was going to say this is the time when the lawyer and the consultant pretty much get together to work with the business to talk about how to restructure and how to approach the various stakeholders.
Okay. And you know, it's interesting, John, you mentioned complying with covenants. Is that something that most of the listeners are familiar with? You know, do you think they go back and revisit those yearly and look at those, or does it kind of hit them out of left field?
Well, I think, Aaron, the truth is we went through a period when things were so plush that the covenants didn't seem to matter as much, and we all got into the habit of believing they could just be adjusted whenever we needed to. Banking has changed as we went through the economic crisis of the last two or three years. The banking crisis that has spurred has caused a significant increase in regulatory pressure on banks, and so even if your individual banker is of a mind to give you leeway, he or she often doesn't have that prerogative anymore. So banking has changed. You have to recognize that. And if you don't know what your covenants are, it's really time that you find out what they are. I think most people do. I think most people have already started to experience some of that tightening and the stringency that is being enforced on the covenants. And many businesses I see are already having to deal with restructurings that are caused by the need to bring themselves into compliance.
Now, is it a good time to kind of meet more bankers and build different relationships maybe with other bankers in your market?
Well, that used to be the classic answer. There were always bankers in your lobby leaving cards and calling on you, wanting your business, trying to take your business away. That is not so much the case today. The best banker for you today in most of these cases is the person you already owe money to. Because establishing new banking relationships, if you're in any kind of difficulty as a business, is virtually impossible.
I would agree with you, John. It's very difficult out there. It's really a dance with who brung you.
Yeah, so you guys, so that's one of the things that you would advise is, you know, make sure that you have that relationship with the banker.
Right. I think when you realize you've got a problem with the bank, the question is how to approach the bank. And the question is whether you have the lawyer go talk to the bank and try to negotiate the covenants, or is it better to have a business consultant? In my experience, and having worked with people like John, is that having a consultant come up with a business plan and working with the banks and doing the changes that need to be made and showing the bank how they're going to turn it around is very helpful. It's hard for a businessman to make those decisions. And John, I'll let you elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, and if I might throw in there too, it's emotion.
Yeah.
Whenever you're looking at that business plan and you come to the point where maybe you need to go back to the bank and talk to them, you know, but you're the business owner and you've built a lifetime on this and you are invested in, you know, it's your identity, and it's hard for you to go and negotiate.
Right.
Yeah.
And some of it is,
Aaron, go ahead.
If I might interject, it is very difficult, but it is also really, really important that you beat the bank to the punch on this.
Oh, good
and
point.
And you instigate those conversations before they compel you to do it. It gives you much more credibility, and it will buy you some leeway in most cases if you take action first.
Are you saying you as the business owner, or you as your advisor, as like the legal advisor?
Well, the owner in conjunction with his or her advisors should do that. And in individual situations, Lee, it depends on what the relationships are. And it's not unusual for an attorney to be really intimately involved with banking relationships in some smaller businesses. That's probably more the exception than the norm, though. And generally speaking, if the attorney has not been very much involved as time went along, it's kind of disturbing to the banker for the attorney to show up out of the blue, so to speak. So normally the best way to do it is to get someone to help you, someone like me or anyone else who does this kind of work, come up with a plan, approach your banker, state very openly that you've had these problems. The banker will probably be aware of those, may not have acted on them, but will be aware of them. Say, we've had these problems. We think these are the things that cause those problems. Here are the actions we're taking to fix them, and here's the period of time it will take. Here are the bench posts that we've set up along the way, or benchmarks we've set up along the way to measure ourselves, and here are the things that we are committing to you we will get done in these time periods. Most times, bankers respond reasonably positively to that kind of approach. If you wait, if you get completely crossways with the bank, and you either get put into the workout group or you just get into a strained relationship with your lending officer, and the bank says to you, we're going to compel you to do these things, they typically end up being more stringent.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, and one of the things I was thinking about, too, is you probably have a little bit more time right now because the banks have so many issues that they're dealing with. So it probably puts you in even a better light that you go to them sooner in today's economic times.
Well, it does. And one of the side issues, though, that we probably need to mention in that is banks do have so many issues, and they often tend to ignore a problem if it's not the most pressing problem. The issue with that has become that when your problem becomes their most pressing problem, you typically do not have the time to react that you once did. They're very quick to act once they decide to act.
And I would add, John, that this the role of the lawyer is not necessarily to negotiate with the bank right now, but to be part of the team, and
that's right.
You know, to read the loan documents, to advise you and the business owner as to the course of action and what the repercussions could be, but certainly not front it with the bank at this stage.
No, but the lawyer really does need to be involved because you get into a lot of situations where the things that you would like to do, if you're the business consultant, you would like to see the business do, some of those things may just not be legally achievable.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Mm-hmm. And so as you get into your plan and start to bring your plan together, the attorney becomes very key because typically the attorney will have a long-standing relationship with the company, will be aware of the legal relationships that exist with vendors or with customers or with employees, with unions, whoever the various groups may be, that the constituent groups that are involved or stakeholders, as Jack used that term a while ago. And so you need to have the attorney very involved before you finalize your plan, because you want to be real sure you don't go commit to the bank you're going to do something that turns out you're just not able to do.
What are a few of the things that need to go into the plan? Can we just quickly give some headlines of what needs to be thought about?
Well, the first thing that needs to be thought about is what are the discretionary expenditures that we're incurring that can just absolutely be cut, might be painful, but will not be fatal to our business to cut them. The second category would be perhaps expansions we've undertaken that can be reversed, areas where we have geographically expanded that we can pull out of, lines of business that we might be able to withdraw from, assets that we may have that are not core to our business anymore that we could sell and get funds to use for our operations or to pay down debt. All of those things go together, and you combine the resources you have and the things you can do, and you try your best to make those fit a budget that will produce the results you need. There are occasions when you just can't get where you would really like to be, and there are times when you do have to approach a lender and say something along the lines of, we just can't pay this loan under these terms. We need more time. We need a principal payment forbearance. We may need an interest rate reduction. That's a real tough one to achieve, but in a dire circumstance, that might could be negotiated. But the fundamental thing is to focus on those things you can do that over the short term will increase your cash inflow or decrease your cash outflow, meaning certainly an increase in the net cash flow. And unfortunately, when you get into these situations, there's a little bit of an environment of live for today and pray for tomorrow. Long-term planning sort of goes out the window, and a month, 3 months becomes kind of the horizon that you have to deal with.
Right. You know, I think it's important. I'm glad you brought that up, though, about I think a lot of people think, well, if I put my plan together, then I'm going to come to the same conclusion as to what the bank has concluded as to what I owe and over the time amount that I can get to pay that. And I think that's another reason why it's so important to have these advisors, because you may come to the conclusion that you can't pay the term. So I think that's very important that people think about that as well. You don't set out to do that, to come up with a plan that doesn't pay the terms. But I think it's important to know it's okay if you come to that conclusion, then the discussion just becomes at a deeper level with the banker.
I think that's true. And Aaron, kind of related to that is another point. The borrower, the business, the family, the ownership of the business needs to stay very front and center with the bank. You don't need to give the appearance of disappearing. You need to be sure you answer their questions. You need to be sure you go to the meetings. And you need to be really sure that you're at work trying your best to accomplish this plan every single day and demonstrate that to your banker.
And I would add, John, that the thing you said about live for today and pray for tomorrow, the short-term plan is so important, because I remember when I first started practicing law, I had a senior lawyer in a situation representing the bank, and he said, oh, my gosh, here we are again, the classic dichotomy. This man wants his money, and this man needs time. Mm-hmm. And most businessmen think that time will heal, and that if you can just give me enough time, I'll turn this ship around. And the bank is saying, I don't have that time. I need a plan to get me some money now.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, a widely used term in today's world, a very popular term, is entrepreneur. The truth is most family businesses are very entrepreneurial, and it's painful to give up an entrepreneur's dream of what was going to be a couple of years from now or 3 years from now or whatever. But oftentimes in these situations, the dream needs to become being here 2 years from now.
Right. You know, it's interesting you say that, because I was thinking about, you know, you just don't know what tomorrow may bring, and you don't know what next year may bring. You can look at how your business is done, and you can look at the state of the economy, and you can look at the industry that you're in, and you can see where you think things are going to go, but it's at the end of the day, it's a risk.
Well, you know, it is a risk, and the last 2 years have certainly demonstrated that. I can remember when things first really turned south, to use the old expression, in the fall of 2008, there were people saying, well, things will be better in the spring, things will be better next summer, and then in the spring and summer of 2009, we said they'd be better in the fall, and in the fall, we said they'd be better in the spring of 2010. And probably they are a little bit better, but they're not markedly better. And the same businesses that were struggling then, if they've managed to be around today, are still struggling. And businesses that weren't struggling then have begun to struggle with 2 years of prolonged slowdown in the economy.
John, that reminds me of the statement you made when we were talking before the show about the three things that you tell a lot of the businesses you go in and about today's economy and the changes that we've faced.
Well, Jack, what I'd mentioned, that one time I put together a very short speech, and it's very short, and it goes like this. The economy is bad, and it's not improving quickly. You cannot bet on it improving quickly. Banking has changed with regulatory pressure and economic circumstances, and probably will never be the same. And you have to adopt a fiscal discipline for your business that allows you to exist within those two constraints.
Sounds like a Tea Party advice.
Well, you know, the Tea Party manifests itself in elections, but that's an attitude that is very, very widespread in the economy, too, is that you got to live within your means and don't bring your problems to me.
Now, when you're working with your clients, when they're in this kind of a triage situation, how do you kind of keep their hopes up and how do you kind of encourage them because it is so difficult of a situation?
Well, it is. And one of the issues that you have there, in addition to the financial issues, is the morale issue, the esprit de corps issue. What you find, though, in most of these circumstances is the business has probably struggled for a while. And most of the stakeholders, the employees in particular, are aware that things are not as good as they should be. What you really will find is when you can develop the plan and you can resolve the plan with the bank, even if the plan is painful, it is often a relief to go back to your employee base, and this is very important that you do, and communicate to them openly and fully. These are the things that we have to do, and that may often involve headcount reductions. It may often involve pay reductions. But my experience over the last 2 years has been that most of the employee groups are relieved to simply know now what is the plan and what is the impact going to be, at least today and over the next 3 months, and where do we have to get to keep from having more negative impact after that. And I find that that really is a bonding experience for most employee groups in smaller businesses.
Yeah, I think communication is so critical in a small business because everybody's pulling toward the same goal, and keeping employees in the dark is...
It's never a good plan,
no,
right?
No.
Now, can you share maybe a story of when you've had to make that difficult conversation with the employees or encourage your client to have that difficult conversation?
I had one small business, and the owner is a true gentleman, and he is a man who is truly concerned about his employees. We had to cut, I believe the count in that was 6 people out of a base of maybe between 50 and 60. That was painful. We had to tell the remaining employee headcount that we were going to reduce their pay by 10%. We combined that, however, with a statement that said, we are reducing your pay by 10% because we have to do something, but we have decided to keep the health care plan because we think there are 3 or 4 of you to whom it is critical at this point we do that. And I'm proud to say that that was done in January of 2009, and I do not believe a single employee left who was retained.
Well, and I think to Jack's point about the communication, just communicating to them that you are trying to, I mean, that you are in, you know, somewhat of a difficult situation, but you want to make the business successful and give them gainful employment or keep their gainful employment, I think is, especially in a closely held family-owned business, is so important because of the emotions.
Right.
It is. And the employees generally, as I said earlier, have some awareness
right.
that these problems are there. And in most cases, you find them relieved that you're able to come and talk to them and tell them what is actually going to occur, what the impact is going to be, and where you're trying to get over the next 3 to 6 months.
Yeah. Now, I'm curious, how quickly do you have those types of discussions? Like, where does that fall on the timeline?
Generally, Aaron, the sooner you can get yourself in the position to generally know what your plan is going to be, as soon as you can know that, as soon thereafter as is possible, same day, next day, is the time to tell the employees, because leaving them to worry and wonder
right.
about what is actually going to happen makes it worse than the actual news.
Right. The uncertainty is the part that the employees have a difficult time with, right?
They do. We human beings in general have difficulty
right.
with uncertainty. And when you have a group dynamic in an employee base, especially in most smaller businesses where the employee base is close and talks and knows each other, the problem can be magnified even beyond ever how bad it may be. It can be magnified in conjecture and on the grapevine far beyond what it is.
And I think that's why it's so important when you develop your plan to get professionals in there, to get a business consultant, to consult with your lawyer as to what your obligations are to your stakeholders, to make sure when you do communicate to the employees that you're not going to run into a roadblock, because the worst thing in the world you could do is communicate a plan and then all of a sudden have to go back to them and say, oop, back to the drawing board.
Well, and I think, too, that you look at, you know, if you're running the business, having a business degree myself, you learn in school a certain way to put your business plan together, but that may not be, you know, what you need to do to get to the bank and become, you know, have a successful meeting and have this plan that you can carry through on. And I think that's another reason it's so important with these advisors, is because you guys have done this. You have the experience, you have the relationships, and you can coach and guide people to where they end up where they want to be.
That's right.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, John. What kind of timeline, you know, is this something you do in 6, 8, 12 months? Is it, you know, I'm guessing it probably varies on the degree of, you know, the restructuring that needs to happen. It could be a 2 or 3 year plan that you're talking about.
It may be. Generally speaking, Aaron, you can produce the plan in a matter of weeks, 2, 3 weeks in most cases, because the things that need to be done are generally rather self-evident in many cases. And you produce the plan, it takes in most cases between 1 and 3 months to fully implement the plan, because there are things you just cannot do today. You can inform people, but you're required to give notice, or you're required to give some kind of advance warning. And so you generally try to lay the plan out and say, this is when the various things will be implemented, here's the effect they will be, and here's what we think the impact on our operating results and cash flow will be in a 1 month period, in a 3 month period, over a 6 month period, and over a year. And generally speaking, in these situations, anything projected beyond a year would not be credible anyway, and you just generally don't try to do it.
But okay. you don't communicate the plan until after you've got clearance from your banker? Or is that?
Well, if the risk of doing that, I wouldn't say you never do that, because you could, but the risk of doing it is that you don't get it approved, and you have to go back a second time and tell them.
Right, and then you lose credibility.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you lose credibility.
Yeah, so
I think it will usually be evident to the employees, particularly if a strange consultant shows up or someone who's not normally a part of their work environment is going around asking questions, trying to learn things about the business. It'll generally be evident to them that something is occurring. And so what you try to do is let them know, yes, we are working on a plan. We're going to present a plan. We'll make that plan known to you as soon as we can. And then as soon as you can reach agreement with your lender, whoever it may be, then you have your formal meetings and communicate the formal plan.
Right. Well, just to recap quickly, it looks like when you're thinking about restructuring, or you've been you've come to the conclusion that you need to restructure. You know, you have to look at cash flow first. You need to definitely develop your plan and talk to the bank before they talk to you. And then I think key, and I think probably one of the most important pieces, is that communication to keep the business flowing, keep the business together, keep the people, you know, bonded to help that business continue to thrive. You know, it's something that we've wanted to do here at the show. It's getting near the end of this show, and one of the things I wanted to do during each show is ask our guests and kind of make a last request. So, gentlemen, I would ask you as a last request from me, what one piece of advice, if you had to pick out one thing about this topic to give our listeners, what would that one piece of advice be? Jack?
Well, I think the key is, from an attorney standpoint, is to make sure that the role of the attorney, at least initially, is as a builder of bridges and not an advocate or litigious. I think it's just much better, and people have much more flexibility in that environment.
And I think it's probably important, too, for you to think about, as an attorney, to have that relationship as well,
right,
since they're a builder of bridges. Yeah. John, what do you think?
Aaron, I'd say the key point is to be a realist. Face the problem, confront it, and solve it before it runs you down and beats you.
Good. Great advice from both of you. Well, thank you so much, John and Jack, for joining us today. And I'd like to remind our listeners to tune into next week's program. If you are listening to us through podcast or via ResultsMatterRadio.com, please remember to visit the site next week to continue part two of our four-part series relating to family-owned businesses. The next segment will cover attracting and retaining the right management team. Thank you again to our guests and to my co-host, Lee. On behalf of Burr & Foreman, a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast, we would like to remind you that if results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, give us a call. You can visit our website to find the right attorney for you at www.burr.com. Thank you, gentlemen.